When you're doing pro-life outreach at a school, at a university, or sometimes even downtown, you can get faced with a crowd of people. How do you manage conversations when there's multiple people, maybe even a significant number of people, all listening in and asking questions? That's what today is all about. Stay tuned. Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Pro-Life Guys podcast, a show dedicated to equipping you with the tools that you need to have compassionate and compelling conversations about abortion so that together we can change minds, save lives, and transform our culture. My name is Cam. I am the host of the show. Thank you for all of you for tuning in. I know it's been a couple weeks since the last episode. We have had a busy time here in Calgary. We just finished our big conference that saw CCBR partner with Allies, the Alberta Life Issues Educational Society, partner for a three-day conference, equipping pro-lifers with the tools that they need to get actively involved in various different ways. We had members from not only the educational arm of the pro-life movement, where CCBR finds ourselves situated, we had a number of groups from the political arm of the pro-life movement. We had people like Mike Schutten from ARPA Canada. We had Alyssa Galobe from Right Now. We had people from what we would consider the counseling arm of the pro-life movement. And really, it was a great experience. We had a ton of people come. We had some great feedback. I believe all of the talks received at the very least an 85% approval rating, not even approval, excellence rating, because we ranked it off of a four-point system of 4 points for very good, 3 points for good, 2 points for average, and 1 point for not good. We didn't have any not goods. We only had one average, and everything else was good and very good. And so it was a joy to work with so many people there. That's probably not why you tuned in, though. You're excited for new content. I apologize for the lower quality video. If any of you know Jonathan Van Maren, host of the Bridgehead podcast and our communications director, he may have nabbed my good quality webcam while he was in Calgary for the conference and failed to give it back to me. So I'm using a lower quality one. I feel like it makes my hair look far more gray. And so apologies for that. And if you know Jonathan, give him a hard time on my behalf. Without further ado, let's talk a little bit about how do we manage groups in conversations. This can be groups of two or three. This can be groups of 40 or 50. How do you manage groups in conversation? The context for this is obviously significant to CCBR's mission is engaging anyone who's old enough to either have an abortion themselves or influence actively somebody else to have an abortion. And so we do some of our outreach at universities, we do them at senior high schools, and we engage people in meaningful conversations. And often while we're at primarily these senior high schools or universities, we have large groups of students that come, and whether we want to say mob us, whether we say hang on our every word, depending on the tone and demeanor of the group. We actually have a group from Calgary right now who are at one of the senior high school or nearby one of the senior high schools here in Calgary today. And so I'll be excited to hear how things went as soon as they get back to the office here. It's important to know that I, while there are benefits to talking to more people, and so it's not all bad news, I do think that it's fair to say that there's not a whole lot of standards by which it is better to talk to more people than to fewer people. It is, in my humble opinion, always better to talk to the smallest number of people possible, because you're able to tailor your message, your communication style to that individual, answer their particular questions, draw them towards a particular conclusion using language and body language that will resonate with them based on who they are, what they're saying, all that kind of thing. Important and appropriate methods of persuasion, I think, is very good to tailor to individuals. And so this is not a lesson on how to acquire large crowds. I would say, if at all possible, don't have large crowds. It is better to have meaningful conversations with a small number of people, and it is harder to have meaningful conversations with meaningful takeaways with larger groups of people. And so I want to talk through a couple principles, though, in how we're going to do this. First of all, I want to talk a little bit about how to decide whether or not to have a large group of people or not. And second of all, what do you do once you have a large group? And what I mean by that is, say myself and a group of people are going to go to a university, and a crowd starts forming around one of the team members, What am I going to do? What I'm going to do is I'm going to evaluate to the best of my ability the skill set of the person who is getting swarmed. Because if they are a very competent volunteer, staff member, intern, whomever they may be, somebody who's going to manage that group as well as can be managed, I am not going to try to turn one big group into two medium-sized groups. And because I want to be able to have as many individual conversations as I can. So if I'm paired with my colleague Alex or Kwana or Blaze or somebody like that, or any number of staff, interns, volunteers that I have a high degree of confidence with in their ability to manage the crowd based on content that I'll talk about a little later, I am not actually going to try to attract a significant portion of their group. I'm going to try to pick people off one by one. And anybody who's listening in has demonstrated to our team that they're intrigued by the topic of abortion. And so I want to try to pick them off one by one and have meaningful conversations with them while this other person is having this large group conversation. I want them to navigate the highs and lows, the pros and cons of having a large group while I can reap the benefits. And I would argue that there's far more pros than cons of speaking one-on-one or in very small groups with people. I'm going to try to pick them off one by one and have meaningful conversations using the roadmap that I've talked about on a number of occasions. On the flip side, if the person who is starting to get a large group has limited confidence or limited abilities, maybe they're a newer volunteer, maybe they're a more entry-level person who doesn't have a ton of experience, maybe they haven't listened to this podcast before, who knows, I am going to work to try to draw as many people as I can away from them so that they can be the one who has fewer people and is able to have more direct, more personable conversations with a smaller number of people, maybe even just one or two people. If there's a way that I can draw as many people over as possible, then I will, to in some ways kind of shield them from a more complicated conversation. And I think in some ways that can be likened to somebody who's very, very boisterous. If you have somebody who is shouting at one of your activism events and you evaluate, okay, the activist that they are shouting at is very capable of managing this more challenging in many ways situation. Therefore, I'm going to leave them to it and I'm going to try to have my conversations as minimally impacted by that person as I possibly can. However, if I deem that I may be better equipped, more capable of having and navigating that conversation with that boisterous person, just like that significant crowd, I'm going to try to find a way to draw their attention towards myself, maybe jump in after making eye contact with that activist so they know exactly what I'm doing. I'm not going to just bluntly and blatantly interrupt them without their knowledge. I'm going to try to make eye contact with that participant, be they a volunteer, an intern, or a staff. I'm going to make eye contact, see how they're doing, see by way of body language if they would like me to take over that conversation. And I'm going to jump in. Hey, I love what you were just saying there. If I can be so bold as to kind of ask a follow-up question, or, you know what, I would love to answer that question and try to draw the attention of the most dominant people over to myself. And so I'm going to try to draw that dominant personality or several dominant personalities over towards myself, kind of magnet their attention to me and allow that other volunteer to move towards more peripheral conversation and engage a smaller number of people. And so that's first of all a consideration. Do you need to have a large group, or are there ways that you can optimize your efforts by engaging small numbers of people, ideally even one at a time, without causing one of your team members who may be less prepared or less capable of having that larger group conversation? If you can have smaller conversations, I would almost always encourage you to do so. And if you need to draw the attention of a group, then you need to engage the most dominant personalities, attract their attention towards yourself, and give your partner an opportunity to pivot into a smaller conversation. What do you do once you're in that big conversation, whether you want to be or not? What do you do once you have a large group of people with you? I think it's very important that you are both polite and bold. What I mean by that is that, as is the case with many mob mentalities and group settings, there is an attraction towards, for a large group of people to want to have a defined opponent. They want to have an enemy. They want to be able to kind of build on one another and hoop and holler and get progressively more and more belligerent at times towards somebody that they don't respect. And so being polite, having engaging body language, positive eye contact, and maybe even, dare I say, a little bit of humor may build rapport and respect with that group. And so being polite, but also being bold in challenging the people who are speaking, because often the conversation is dominated. Even if you have a large group of 20, 30, 40 people around you, generally speaking, the conversation is dominated by a smaller proportion of that. It might be one or two people, might be slightly more than that, three, four, five people, but rarely is everybody bringing meaningful content into the conversation. So often it's dominated by a hand select number of people, and everyone else just kind of rallies around, yeah, what she said, or what he said, or you didn't answer that question, or whatever it may be. And so identifying the controlling entities, knowing who's who in the zoo, having the opportunity to look around and, Dora, I'm not sure if you're able to cut out that phone, but we have an office phone. Sometimes it rings. Apologies if you're listening to the podcast and you hear our office phone in the background. However, knowing who's who in the zoo, who are you, body language and content of their delivery, really discussing with, who's bringing forward meaningful information and questions, who's bringing forward the most dominant and most belligerent points, and who is the most receptive. And those often are not, those three categories are not necessarily a Venn diagram that is just the exact same person. Hopefully there's a little bit of overlap in there. But I'm sure if you can imagine with me a group, there's probably some people that are not saying anything, but are hanging on your every word and maybe every word of the person who is bringing forward the accusations, concerns, or questions. I'm sure that you can think of people who ask questions that are not thought out whatsoever, and they're just looking for a reaction from the crowd. I'm sure that you can think of people who kind of straddle both, that are asking really good questions, and maybe they're getting a reaction from the group, but they are genuine questions. And so knowing who's who and knowing who your real audience is, that you are shaping responses that are going to resonate the most profoundly with those that you have deemed to be the most receptive. Therefore, though the content of your answer must be related and directed towards the person who asked them, the delivery and tone of your message, and sometimes even the content of it, should be more directed towards somebody who didn't ask the question. And to give a concrete example of that, I think of a senior high school that we were at, and there was a group of maybe 25 people around me, many of them grade 11 and 12 girls, and almost all of the talking was being done by two or three young men. And so they were asking these questions about sexual assault. They were asking these questions about bodily autonomy. And yet I was understanding that most of my true audience was actually the young women who were listening to not only my responses, but listening when I asked questions to the responses of these belligerent young guys that were responding to a lot of my questions. And so I was able to frame things, particularly around bodily autonomy and sexual assault, in a way that would resonate very, very meaningfully with the young women who were there, because the fellas were literally scrolling through their phones, looking at the, as they revealed to me later, top Twitter arguments in defense of abortion. They didn't care at all about what I was saying in response. They were just going through their list of best Twitter arguments in defense of abortion. And yet my true audience were these young women who were very, very interested and concerned about the answers that I would or would not give. And so knowing your real audience, being able to analyze while somebody's asking a question, looking around, keeping an eye on who is listening, who is not listening, keeping an eye on who is sticking around to answer questions. And there's a lot of people who will pop in and out of these discussions, and basically they want to know, is this the group of people that they want to spend their lunch hour with or their after school with or something like that? Or is this not intriguing? And so I'm be mindful of that. Concretely, I want to be very, very dedicated to my roadmap. What I mean by that, so we often talk on the show about addressing justifications, demonstrating first and foremost that we acknowledge the suffering and hardship that so many in our world are faced with, particularly mothers and fathers, and how difficult parenting can be. From there, we want to move into the humanity of preborn children and acknowledge and identify and help the other person recognize the presence of a human being from the moment of fertilization until their natural death. At times, we might dip down into the personhood and value of that human being and drawing them all together towards the pro-life worldview. The reason why I mention this is because it can be tempting during a conversation to just answer every question that is asked the loudest. And so you end up spending 45 minutes of a lunch hour talking through 400 different circumstances, or more really, 10 different circumstances asked 40 different times. And you get to the end and you realize you haven't really made any progress because you gave 40 really good analogies pertaining to sexual assault. You gave 10 great analogies for bodily autonomy. You talked and you empathized and you did all this kind of stuff, but you never actually got to the humanity of the preborn. Or if you're starting with the humanity of the preborn and you just go through the human rights argument 400 times and you haven't progressed to identifying and empathizing with the hardship that mothers and fathers are faced with, or if you go through that over and over again, but you never get down into age-based discrimination, if you're not familiar with a roadmap, if you don't know where you're trying to get to, you're going to spin your tires an awful lot. And so in that conversation, I want to be selecting, okay, I want to select a question that pertains to the starting point. I want to start with something that pertains to a justification. And I want to collect up several of them to the point where I'm going to articulate, okay, what do you guys think about abortion? Okay, you mentioned sexual assault. Let's talk a little bit about sexual assault, common ground analogy question. Who has another justification on this? Okay, as you'll see with so many of these justifications, we recognize that there are real problems in our world that demand solutions. And for each of them, whether sexual assault, as you mentioned, whether bodily autonomy, as you mentioned, whether life of the mother, whether this, whether that, we're going to acknowledge that, yeah, there are problems that demand solutions. We don't respond to crises involving born children by killing their born children. And if not in those cases, why preborn children? We're going to do that over and over and over again. And once we've collected a handful of those examples, I'm going to say, okay, we've talked through a number of these justifications, and yet I keep asking the same question. If not a born child, why a preborn child? I'm going to try to get the whole group to go from stage one justifications to stage two humanity and talk through the human rights argument. Can we agree that all humans should get human rights? If something is growing, even from one cell to two cells to four cells, isn't it alive? If that living organism has human parents, isn't he or she a living human? Wouldn't that make abortion a human rights violation? And then I'm going to try to answer a whole bunch of biologically related questions. I know that I'm going to hear a lot of justifications. I know that I'm going to have somebody who either didn't hear, didn't bother listening, or just joined, ask again sexual assault. I'm going to say, that's a great question. We just answer that. But before we loop back to that question, I want to finalize this, because as everyone here has already heard, we recognize that there are problems in our world that demand solutions. And yet, as we're talking about right now, couldn't we agree that all human beings should get human rights? And so I want to be bold. I want to be polite, but I want to be bold in putting on pause a question that has already been covered for the sake of the group from a newcomer or somebody who ignored my answer. And I want to be fairly bold in pushing them on the next step of the roadmap. And from there, okay, somebody's going to bring up consciousness, somebody's going to bring up this, somebody's going to bring up that. I'm going to try to collect them all together and move down into that third part of personhood and ask, okay, why do these differences exist? You who mentioned the fact that they're just a blob of cells, why do they just look like a blob of cells and not you and I? Because of how old they are. And you mentioned consciousness. Why aren't they conscious yet? Because of how old they are. And you mentioned their dependence on the mother's body. Why are they dependent on the mother's body? As you can see, for all three of you, you all brought up different things, and yet all of these differences exist because of the age of the preborn child. And so I would ask each of you to help me understand, how is killing a human being based on how old they are any different or any better than killing a human being based on any other arbitrary characteristic? How is discriminating human rights based on age any better, any different than any other form of discrimination? And so I want to try, if at all possible, to draw the whole group along with the roadmap, starting with justifications, moving towards humanity, moving towards personhood. An interesting tactic that I have myself played out on a number of occasions, I've witnessed other people do it as well, is polling the audience on where they want to go next. And so an example of that, like I mentioned, sometimes I'll answer a lot of questions about sexual assault, we'll move on to the humanity of the preborn, and then somebody will bring up sexual assault again. And I will try to lever the group, not necessarily against, but in some ways against the person who just asked the question of, you know what, I think that's a great question. For all of you here, did everyone here hear the answer that I gave just a moment or two ago about sexual assault? Did anyone not hear that? Okay, if I have a majority of people raise their hands, then okay, I'll repeat it again because there aren't enough people who heard my explanation last time, common ground analogy question. Or if the majority of people say, no, we heard you, okay, for those of you who are here, is it okay if I move forward with what I was just talking about? Or do you think that we should recover this question that just got asked? And it's not a guarantee that you're not going to be told, no, you have to answer it again. Like, you gave a terrible answer. He's right, sexual assault. But it's amazing how often, if you can coalesce that group into a unified opinion of, no, we're not going to deal with that right now because we all heard your answer to that already, and now we're talking about the humanity of the preborn or the value of preborn children in personhood. It's amazing the impact that can have on that person who's being very persistent and interrupting over and over and over again. What about sexual assault? What about sexual assault? You know, with all due respect, I have addressed that already. I'm curious for the group of you who are here then, so we did talk about this already, and I'd love to get through with you, but I obviously this fella really wants to have that answer. Are we okay if I go back and answer this guy's question, and then we'll kind of catch up to where we are right now? It's amazing how that can often dispel some of the conflict that might be broiling and the agitation that might be coming from a newcomer who didn't hear it and really wants their question to be answered. And so I think that that can go really well by trying to draw people together and showcase how many of their concerns are actually responded to in a similar fashion. You know, you brought up this and you brought up that and you brought up that. And for each of these and so many others, we're going to respond in this way. Does that make sense to you, you and you? There's a follow-up question. That put together with that, put together with that, we're going to respond to it in a similar way by walking through X, Y, Z. You would all agree then, or you're all suggesting then that it's different because they're not human beings. Let's address that together then. Let's talk through whether or not all humans should get human rights. If something is growing, even from one cell to two cells to four cells in a coordinated way, is it not alive? On and on and on. And so those are some principles that I want to prioritize. And with that, one of the most important things that we can have when, managing large crowds is getting formal confirmation. Again, so often we give valuable, street-tested, excellent quality information, but we don't confirm that it resonates, that it actually answers the question that was brought up. And so very often I want to offer my response. And once I'm done, I'm going to go to the people whose questions I've tried to draw together. And so you brought up this and you brought up this and you brought up this. Does that make sense? Would you agree with that understanding that we cannot kill born humans to solve those problems? You would agree on sexual assault. You would agree on bodily autonomy. You would agree on poverty or whatever it may be. Yes. Okay, cool. So now that we're all on the same page for that, what is the difference? Okay, so you guys would all agree then that the difference is that this happens. Could we all agree that all humans should get human rights? Yes, you agree, you agree, you agree. I want to get formal agreement because I don't want to get three quarters of the way through a conversation and have somebody bring up something that I thought was resolved a long time ago, but I just didn't get that confirmation. I didn't get that clarity from them. I want to try to be as intentional as I can to get formal confirmation as much as possible from the points that I'm conveying, that we get meaningful nods or verbal agreements or some kind of productive body language to acknowledge that, yes, if something is growing, it must be alive. Yeah. We all agree on that. Okay. You brought up trees, you brought up cancer, you brought up whatever. Let's address all of these together. If that living organism has human parents, he or she must be a living human. That kind of thing. Trying to draw people as close together as humanly possible. You're kind of forcing a whole bunch of, to use a crude analogy that I just thought up off the top of my head, I'm trying to force as many animals that want to cross the highway across a wilderness bridge as possible. I want to get them all packed together so that they're all following me as synchronized as possible. Okay. And so that's a few considerations for large groups. First of all, I would suggest trying to avoid large groups if you're able to. If you're not able to, or if it's better for you to embrace the larger group and free up some of your fellow activists to not have large groups, then I'm going to do that. And in those large groups, I'm going to try to discern relatively quickly, but throughout the entire process of my conversation, who's who in the zoo, who is listening to my answers, who's asking well-intentioned questions, who's just shooting from the hip and trying to be a disturbance, and where do I allocate my attention and where do I allocate the tone and language of my responses. From there, I'm going to try to be as steadfast and dedicated to my roadmap as possible to make sure that I'm making productive steps in the right direction. And finally, I'm going to try to synchronize as many of the conversations and as many of the objections as possible by drawing several justifications, several challenges to the humanity, several challenges to the value and personhood of preborn children together, so that I can synchronize as many people as possible and optimize the chances that I can get them all to the finish line and not, okay, well, I got 2/3 of the way with this person, but then they left to go get lunch, and I got halfway with this person before they got frustrated that it wasn't answering enough of their questions. And really, I spent an hour talking and had almost no success in actually getting people towards the pro-life worldview because I wasn't quite as disciplined as I ought to be at the end of the day. So those are a few considerations. Love to hear your feedback and suggestions as well. I'm sure many of the people listening have been in these scenarios. What has worked well for you? What has not worked well? And also, as always, please let me know what you would be interested in hearing more content about. Now that the conference is over, I'm going to have much more time in my studio to be able to record content. And so please let me know what you've got questions or concerns or queries about, whether on social media, on YouTube. Please go check out the YouTube. We're up to 771 subscribers as of this morning. I doubt that we'll get to 1,000 by Christmas or by the new year, but I would love to keep rolling towards 1,000 subscribers. As always, having more subscribers makes it easier for me to get the highest profile of guests that I can onto the show. So thanks a ton. May God bless you abundantly, wherever you're at, however many hours are left in your day.